Well, as is customary, we'll start on time. We know you're busy people, and good evening and welcome to the second presentation in this, our 11th series of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at WKU, I coordinate this series with my absent colleague, Peggy Wright, at home recovering from knee surgery, and with assistance from our research instruction coordinator, Brian Carson. Ryan Dowell and Christopher McConnell designed our posters, and our technical specialist tonight is Shadden Atts. Our speaker tonight is a native of Ashland, Kentucky, where he grew up in the Appalachian steel and coal country. His father was a native of Prince Edward Island, Canada, while his mother's family was of Slovenian heritage. His father was a TV and radio personality and his mother an accordion player, and they met while both were performing at a TV station in Charleston, West Virginia. After graduating from Flatwoods High School, he earned an Army scholarship to Notre Dame, where he graduated Phi Beta Kappa in 1981. After obtaining his law degree at the University of Louisville, he spent 4 years as an officer in Germany and Central America, where he was attached to special forces in Panama. He's worked for national and state candidates for political office and served a term as Commonwealth's attorney in Louisville. Today, he's a partner at Stites and Harbison, where he chairs the white-collar defense practice. He's been quoted as saying he went to law school to give the closing argument in To Kill a Mockingbird. Having been interested in art his whole life and having taken numerous courses in art at Notre Dame, on a lark, he decided to drop off some of his cartoons at the Louisville Courier-Journal, the state's leading newspaper. They asked for more, and now after more than 1,000 cartoons and a nomination for a Pulitzer Prize, the rest, as they say, is history. If the point of an editorial cartoon is to start discussion on a topic, Mark continues to be successful, and it's rumored that he draws more feedback than anything else in print or online at the newspaper. However, it remains for him a part-time occupation. By day, he's frequently mentioned among the best lawyers nationally, and with his wife Dustin Meek, also an attorney, they're parents of three sons, 24, 22, and 16. And in his spare time, he coaches basketball at Nativity Academy, a small middle school offering educational opportunities to children from low-income families. Please welcome our state's most celebrated cartoonist, Mark Murphy. Mark?
Thank you, Brian, and thanks everybody for being here tonight. It's a gorgeous night. You could be on your porches or out on your terraces or on your lawns enjoying the great weather we have. Basically, my mission here is already accomplished. I've had the time of my life. I spent the evening having dinner across the street with Brian and his colleague and other people from the university. And fortunately, it's only then that he told me who else has spoken at this event and as a part of the series. Because if I had heard in advance the kind of people that you've had and that you've entertained and who have enlightened this community with the kind of things they had to say and that they did, I wouldn't have come. I mean, there's, you know, I see people, frankly, I see two generations of people here and they seem to be divided or separated by an entire generation. I see one generation and then another one. So probably no one here knows the movie Wayne's World, because some people probably may have been, you know, okay, everybody knows Wayne's World. Well, then you know what I mean when I say, absolutely, I'm not worthy. I hope that you enjoy these next few minutes. This isn't a program that has a title. I'm speaking at a conference here in a couple of weeks, and they did want to give it a title. And the title that they chose sort of resonated with me, because it's the kind of thing that my wife says to me all of the time. They wanted to know what goes through the mind of an editorial cartoonist, and they wanted to know why I think of these things. And so the title of that program, which probably is a good introduction to this one, is What Were You Thinking? Because probably once or twice every day, that's what my wife says to me, is what were you thinking? It has nothing to do with cartooning, by the way, when she's saying those things. What I'm going to do, as a lawyer, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do, then I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to tell you what I did, Judge. I'm going to, Your Honor, if I may, I actually feel somewhat at home, so that makes me feel a little bit better, although I hope there'll be no objections, and if they are, I hope you overrule them during the middle of the presentation. I'm going to start a little bit. Brian, again, it's really an honor to be here, and I appreciate the introduction. Sort of a little bit of where I came from. I want to talk about, because obviously this has been an educational series, not just entertaining. I want to, I guess, elucidate a little bit about the history of political cartooning, and then we're going to get right into my cartoons, for better or worse, and I'll tell you what I was thinking. I had the luxury of getting here a little bit early. I had a conference call on a case, and it finished early. And imagine that, lawyers talking shorter than they were supposed to. And I actually sat down in the cafe up here, and I did Sunday's cartoon while I was waiting to have dinner with Brian. And so, unfortunately, it didn't make its way onto the PowerPoint, but I'll pass it around because it's a relatively small group. Brian mentioned during the introduction that my father was a television and radio show host, and my mother was an accordion player, and they met on a TV show in Charleston, West Virginia. Pretty much, you don't need to know anything more about the bizarre household that I was raised in than those facts. I was fully 14 years old before I knew, and started spending the night at other friends' houses and things like that, before I knew that other people's homes weren't like mine. That Dad wasn't going out that night and speaking, and that Mom wasn't practicing this. Now it's coming back into vogue with Mumford and Sons and everything else, but this very weird instrument, the accordion. We didn't have the normal sort of conversations around the hearth. We, in so many ways, many of which have required years of therapy, we didn't have the normal house at home. But all of that dysfunction, I think my family would say, all that dysfunction finds its way into these cartoons. I want to start by talking a little bit, as I said I would, I guess, about our founder. You know, country has George Washington. Political cartoonists have Thomas Nast. Some of you are familiar with Thomas and the role that he played. I see some people shaking their heads. President Lincoln called Thomas Nast his number one recruiter. General Grant gave credit to two people for his own ascendancy to the presidency. One of them, he said, was General Sheridan with his sword, and the other was Thomas Nast with his pen, because of the cartooning and the things that he did. And at the time, it was quite unusual. Just to give you an example of one of them, to say that this is wordy and difficult and requiring an awful lot of interpretation is not even saying enough. But that was sort of the Nast style. Thomas Nast is the one who gave us the donkey that represents the Democratic Party, the elephant that represents the Republican Party, basically is credited with ensuring the downfall of Tammany Hall and during the New York City municipal crisis. I want to read a quote which helps to explain a little bit, and I'm going to read this, contrary to my lawyer's sort of opening statement. Oh, by the way, I've never got to give the closing statement in To Kill a Mockingbird, but not yet. Maybe someday I will. But I want to get this correct, because one of the things that I've found since I've been doing these cartoons, and I'm in my sixth year now with the Courier-Journal, for whatever reason, and it might be just the way our brains are wired, the editorial writers can write the exact same thing that I'm drawing on the left-hand column, on the left-hand side of the paper. I draw the same thing on the right-hand side of the paper, and yet the thing that people get outraged about, or sometimes really like a lot, are the drawings. And I guess it's because ever since we were children or whatever, the visual image is something else. An editorial writer can write about the most obvious and tragic example. We talk about some serious things here. I've had to explain to a lot of people when I first started doing this, so you're drawing comics, you know, like you did. You draw funny comics sometimes at the newspaper. You also do your editorial cartoons. Most of these, some of these, because I didn't want this to be the most downer evening of your week, most of these are somewhat lighthearted, but most of the political cartoons that I enjoy drawing are the ones that are the heavier ones. And so there's some very serious topics. Let's take, for instance, soldier suicide. We're going right into it. We're heading downhill right here. We have had this past year, this last calendar year, there were more American soldiers that killed themselves than were killed by enemy bullets in war. You know, I mean, this has been a long time coming, and it's a serious problem. I have a son right now who's a second lieutenant in the United States Army, who, by the way, is not being paid right now, thanks to the government shutdown. But that's a whole other issue that I'm getting ready to draw about. And he was home visiting us, and Lee even told me that, and I couldn't believe it. When the editorial writers write 1,000 words about the tragedy that it is that our service members are coming home and killing themselves, on the left-hand side of the paper, we read it, some of us, many people I hope read it, and it saddens us and it enrages us and it makes us think a whole lot of things. And yet, you can imagine, and I haven't done this, I tried to and I couldn't make it work. If I, on the other side of the page, were to draw a picture of a soldier with a gun to his head, you can imagine the emotions that would evoke and the outrage. As a matter of fact, I drew it away. I finally did a cartoon that involved using the flag draped casket, because that's a symbol that we can all understand. It's still a tragedy. It still is meaningful and tears at our hearts, but it's something that's somewhat acceptable. So a lot of what we have to do in the political cartooning business is to use symbols that affect people, but don't completely distance them from the subject matter or outrage them to the point of not being able to even engage in a discussion. When I draw, the theory that I keep in mind is, let's say that I drew this cartoon about somebody, about individuals, about a group of people, about a company, about a war, about something else. I always draw it with the idea that the next day I'm going to run into this person on the street. And the question is, can I defend myself? You know, is it something that I can sit down with this person and say, this was my opinion, this is how I expressed it. Now, I realize you have a different opinion, but was I at least fair? Hard-hitting maybe, but was I fair? And I think sometimes I've stayed within those boundaries. I think sometimes other people have complained that I've gone outside them, and we'll see one of those in here. Anyway, here's the quote, getting back to what I was saying about Thomas Nast. William Boss Tweed actually dispatched his minions to take care of Thomas Nast with this command: stop them damn pictures. I don't care what the papers write about me. My constituents can't read. But damn it, they can see the pictures. An irony in history is that when Tweed escaped from jail and fled to Spain in 1876, Boss Tweed got out of jail, went to Spain. He was recognized and arrested by a customs official who didn't read English but had seen his pictures drawn by Thomas Nast in the paper. So in the end, it sounds like he got what he deserved. Fortunately, there are no more corrupt politicians, and so we don't have to have the modern Thomas Nast. Somebody mentioned, Judge, that to me, one of my heroes, and I think there was a time when, certainly I think, he was the preeminent political cartoonist in the state of Kentucky and perhaps in the nation, was Hugh Haney for the Louisville Courier-Journal. I'm partial to Hugh Haney and the Louisville Courier-Journal because that's where I am now, even though I grew up in eastern Kentucky. And obviously, I personally don't think I can carry Joel Pett's water. He's the cartoonist for the Herald Leader, does a fabulous job. But Hugh worked for, of course, for the Courier-Journal forever. And as the judge said, it was remarkable that without having the advantage of drawing on an iPad and maybe erasing an entire cartoon or starting over or hitting another button that says, let's do this again, everything was done on paper. He was allowed to smoke in the office, as you can tell. He had that advantage. And everything had to be done from scratch. The thing about Hugh Haney's drawings, here's an example, is that some of them have survived decades. And will probably still be published not only in the Louisville Courier-Journal but in other papers around the nation for as long as any of us are still alive. This is a famous Christmas cartoon that he drew. Many people are shaking their heads, in which he's got the flustered and frustrated dad at home trying to go through his Christmas list. There's Christmas packages everywhere, and somehow, even though he did them every day, he was able to fashion out of the packages, as he often did with Thomas Jefferson and dollar bills and things like that, the image of Christ, and he says, let me see now, who have I forgotten? You'll see that again this Christmas. When you go online to see thecourierjournal.com, they'll display that. In one of the greatest tragedies in all of cartooning history, that's a phrase no one's ever said before, Hugh Haney never won the Pulitzer Prize. It could be, those who have thought about it, and again, this man's a hero of mine, is that he drew some hard-hitting cartoons, but he tended to take the lighter touch, just his personality. So here's an example. We can compare this with 30 years have passed. Times have changed. You know, now we've got Tosh 2.0, and we've got YouTube, and we've got everything else. So one can say we have a meaner society. Maybe I'm partially to blame for that. I've examined, you know, that issue several times. But this was the first time that the University of Louisville and the University of Kentucky played each other. You can see how even the caricatures are slightly different. Hugh drew a fabulous cartoon. His artwork was second to none, and wrote a nice little poem. Compare that, which I think is fabulous. You'll compare that to the sort of cartooning that we have nowadays, a much looser style, and in some ways, I think, in a lot of ways, not as good. In terms of my cartoon and modern cartooning, sort of what was I thinking about? As Brian said, I work all day as a lawyer. Some pretty bizarre things happen during those days. I chair the white-collar practice at our law firm. Some more bizarre things happen with that and my clients. But none of those would be interesting or funny to anybody else except me and perhaps my wife, who's also a lawyer. So I spend time in between cases, in between conference calls, sometimes during the occasional conference call, checking the internet and checking sources to see what's going on during the day around the world. And I have an advantage that Hugh Haney did not have. Hugh would get the Washington Post, obviously yesterday's Courier Journal. He would know what's going on in the newsroom. He had the advantage, I'm jealous, he had the advantage of sitting there in the newspaper with the editors, figuring out what they were going to do for the day. Because there were no do-overs, of course, at that time. And unlike with me, on a day that I can't do a cartoon, for instance, my cartoons never appear on Saturday, the newspaper can go to the internet and pull somebody out of Indianapolis or New York or wherever and use their cartoon. There was none of that. If Hugh Haney didn't draw a cartoon that day, there was no cartoon in the Courier Journal, because they couldn't just drive up to Indianapolis, take the hard copy of the cartoon and what that guy was drawing, if they were going to allow him to do that, and then bring it back a little. But he checked all the newspapers, but he had to do it by hand, and he had to wait till the newspapers got there. Obviously, nowadays, an editorial cartoonist can check, you know, it's kind of like they say about your iPhone. We have all of the knowledge that's ever been amassed in the history of humankind in the palm of our hand, and we use it to take pictures of our food and cats. But when I'm not taking pictures of food or cats, I can check to see what's in the Washington Post, see what's on HuffPost, see what's in the Drudge Report. I check conservative, I check liberal, I check what's overseas, everything else. And yet, even though I try to spend all day coming up with an idea so that by the time I sit down with my iPad at 7 o'clock at night to draw a cartoon, I can start drawing and not have to hit writer's block. In the end, ultimately, and we'll get into some more serious stuff, what people really want to see are cartoons of animals. It's just true. There could be 180,000 people, I said this at dinner, there could be 180,000 people killed in the war in Syria, and I could draw the best cartoon anyone's ever drawn about the war in Syria, and there'll be six people who maybe say, that's a pretty neat cartoon. Draw one picture of a bunny rabbit in a stocking cap, and it goes viral within 20 minutes, right? So that's how people think. So, the cicadas came out this year, and this was me imagining in my twisted mind what the cicadas would be thinking or saying to themselves after 17 years. There was a black president, the Red Sox won the World Series, and people send pictures of their food to their friends. He's obviously lying, I'm asking that grumpy cat over there. I love that. We had a really cold spring in Kentucky. I had this idea, for whatever reason, animals talking like humans has always really made humans laugh. I mean, think back to Snoopy. You know, Charles Schulz, one of my heroes, the Peanuts, read his biography. It's a great biography. You should read his biography. Have you read it yet?
No.
All right, well, that's your homework. Okay. You're still in school. I can give you homework. The Charles Schulz biography is awesome. And the Peanuts comic strip was okay, but it didn't really take off until he started putting human words into Snoopy. And so people like that. So here's the Easter Bunny. He's cold, and he has to talk to Punxsutawney Phil, who is not interested in talking to him. In Louisville, if you've been there recently, there was a railroad bridge over the Ohio River. Famously, it sat there empty for decades. Architecturally, it's okay looking. The Ohio River in Louisville is, frankly, too wide. In Cincinnati, it's neat because it's small and you can have the things on the other side of the river and the bridges are cool. But in Louisville, it's like a mile and a half across. And there's just, and then on the other side, it's Indiana. So the Big Four Bridge, they finally made a very cool project out of it. It's now a walking bridge, which they claim at some point in time people are going to be able to actually get off the bridge on the other side and walk to Indiana, although some people are voting against that. But for now, they have music streaming in, and certainly during this beautiful summer we had, it was packed every night. It's lit, and there's all these colors. If anybody's been there, if you get the chance to go to Louisville, one of the things you need to do, I mean, when you're there visiting family or friends or going to a ball game or something, walk across the Big Four Bridge. It's actually very cool. They were having a problem because people were walking their dogs quite naturally across this bridge. Now, it's just steel girders that they've then put some rubberized tarp down. I'm not tarp, but boards down. It's all clean, and it's also, there's no grass. So people were walking their dogs on the bridge, and the dogs were pooping on the bridge. And people weren't picking it up because, you know, nobody really picks up dog poop. They do the fake pickup, right? See if the neighbor's looking, you reach down, and then you pull it back up and you put it in, but you've left the poop there. Well, that was happening on the bridge. You know, again, 180,000 people dead in Syria, American soldiers are fighting all over the country, and the front page of the Courier Journal for at least 2 days was concerned with whether or not dogs can be taken because people love their dogs. And you're not going to tell me I can't take my dog up on the Big Four Bridge. Well, they finally did. So, again, dogs talking. People thought that was hilarious. Now, this is when you get into the more serious aspect of things. symbolism. I don't have a lot of space. The editorial cartoonist doesn't have a lot of space in the newspaper or on the internet, in the internet media. In addition to that, there are different styles that one can use. There are editorial cartoonists. Hugh Haney was not one of them. Joel Pett is not one of them. There are editorial cartoonists around the country whose style is to have husband and wife sitting in living room, husband, always husband, reading newspaper, and the two of them are talking. And then you have this paragraph of conversation. And I don't think that's what people go to editorial cartoons to see, because that's basically just two people saying the words that are written on the other side of the newspaper in the editorializing part where it's written in the paper. To me, the perfect editorial cartoon, you know, when I've finished a cartoon and I'm really happy with it, it's because there are either no words or just a few words or just a guy saying, uh-oh, or something like that, because it's all about, to me, the image. Somebody else is doing the writing. This is all about the image. It's kind of like they say about music sometimes is, you know, it's really all about the music. Protest songs, love songs, everything else. When it comes right down to it, the reason you like a song is the music. And I think the reason that people like art, like a cartoon, is the drawing and the art and the image, not the words. The use of symbolism, therefore, is important, because it wouldn't be interesting or intriguing or catch your eye or anything if I were to simply say, oh no, Assad has killed 180,000 people, because you've already read that. So there's images that you can draw upon that are iconic, both in good ways and bad ways. Skulls and bones, those are dead people. The flag draped casket. Blood can be used, again, for better or worse, in several different situations. The Statue of Liberty is frequently used by me and by a lot of other people as a symbol of the United States. It can also symbolize freedom. It can also symbolize immigration. It can also symbolize a lot of things like that. Mount Rushmore, sturdiness, presidential, our history. There's all sorts of symbols like that. And if I can draw on a symbol and only use a few words, it kind of makes my job easier. And I hope that it helps the viewer get right to the point early and not have to think about it. Because I also don't think that people want to look at an editorial cartoon for more than, frankly, a couple of seconds, right? I mean, you look at it, I like that, I don't like it, and then you go see how the Reds did, right? I mean, that's sort of how people see their news. I understand that. So, politics in Kentucky. Christmas every day for a political cartoonist. There was a time, and I was so disappointed. I mean, I wrote her letters, I called her, I stalked her on Facebook. They eventually took out an EPO against me. I really wanted Ashley Judd to run for Senate, because it would have been fabulous. Now, Ashley's a homie, right? I mean, she's from Ashland. She's one of my girls. I was going to be a fan. Plus, if you couldn't tell, and if you haven't told yet, but I tend toward the liberal side. I tend toward the progressive side. I tend toward the Democrat side. I'm not ashamed of that. But Ashley running, because she'd never run a political office before, and she was going to run against Mitch McConnell, for God's sake. I mean, the guy is an evil genius. I have great respect for Mitch McConnell, even though, all right, the gentleman from the newspaper asked me, says, you know, do you ever, you know, do people talk to you? I was going to be the United States Attorney for the Western District of Kentucky. Congressman John Yarmuth went to Mitch McConnell, and when he walked into Mitch McConnell's office, Mitch McConnell said, I'm not going to select the man who draws me in a cheerleader costume. So I was out. But take the story full circle, and people who have visited Mitch McConnell's office since that occurred have seen three or four of my cartoons up on the wall. And this happens all the time. I'll draw a cartoon of a politician, and as we were talking about, even though they pretend to hate it, and maybe they do hate it, they especially hate it because no one even thinks they look the way they do in photographs, much less in political cartoons. How many times have you taken a picture of you, like a selfie of you and your wife, or you and your wife goes, we can't use that picture. It's great of you, but she says, no way, you know, we're not using that picture. But the politicians whom I criticize in cartoons, routinely, about a week and a half later, not them, but a staffer will call my secretary, not me, and say, can we have the original of the cartoon that was in the Courier Journal a couple weeks ago? Because it's sort of, what's the word? Not edifying, it's legitimizing. If you're a politician who's done something that made somebody draw a political cartoon, then you're somebody. Right? Now, Mitch McConnell doesn't need anybody to tell him that he's somebody, but he still gets a kick. Maybe he likes to see himself in cheerleader costumes. I don't know. Anyway. So, oh, and then Rand Paul. I will vote. I'm a Democrat. I'm a progressive. I'm a liberal. I will vote for Rand Paul until he's dead. Because, you know, it's like they said in the Seinfeld show. It's gold, Jerry. It's gold. I mean, I can use Aqua Buddha the rest of my life. You can't use too much Aqua Buddha. You can use too much Aqua Velva, but you can't use too much Aqua Buddha. Okay, now, I draw five times a week. I've got some common sense. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I know you think that doesn't say anything, Judge, but I know what will pass muster generally and what don't. But I have editors, and they have the final say, obviously. I don't own the paper. I'm not the publisher. I'm not even the editor. I don't even have an office down there. They hardly even pay me, but that's a whole other problem. Probably in 5-6 years now of doing this and thousands of cartoons, I've had maybe 4 rejected, so I'm pretty proud of that. Although people will say that's because the paper no longer has any standards. This is the one that was rejected. You now are 25 of the total 600 people who've ever seen this cartoon. And this was one of my favorite cartoons ever. Everybody who's under the age of 70 and breathing knows about the Ashley Judd hockey jersey photo, right? The poster? Decent poster. A couple of women are going, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, it's just a sexy poster, and it's Ashley Judd for the University of Kentucky, and she's got a hockey poster on it. She's naked from the waist down, but you don't see it because she's sitting down, and the hockey jersey covers everything up, but it's just very cool. Well, when Ashley was going to run against Mitch, I drew this. Now, my... right? You're still... My wife got angry because she said this was unnecessary. The hair. That was okay, but there's sometimes my little hand, I just can't stop it. So I did that, but everything's covered up. There's nothing. It's so coquettish. It's so perfect. And that would be behind his desk right now today if they let me publish it. But the reason at the time was, and it was kind of true, they said, well, you know, as a newspaper, we get criticized for picking on Mitch too much. And we're right in the middle of that right now, and we're not going to let that happen. I thought, oh! So I tried to use it 3 more times, and then Ashley jumped out of the race, and then obviously it loses its relevance. Symbols. Again, you want people to understand what the larger picture is, and you try to make a point in a smaller picture. From a legal perspective, I've always struggled, and you know, sometimes I'll meet people, other lawyers on the street in Louisville, and they'll say, hey, you know, I really like what you're doing. Sometimes I just don't get it. And I understand that. Sometimes I reach. I don't want it to be too basic. I don't want necessarily to be completely accessible. I mean, it's not high, it's not Family Circus. Billy went outside without his pajama bottoms again. You know, that's not what I'm drawing. I personally believe that Kentucky is never going to make a lot of progress as long as we have the same tax code that's presently in place. It's a serious problem that we could talk about for 3.5 hours, and it would be the absolute worst presentation ever made at a Barnes & Noble. But I'm just telling you that as a matter of, I think, fact, and a lot of, it's not a this isn't a conservative or a liberal position at all, but until we change our tax code, which goes all the way back to the Constitution, it takes an amendment to the Constitution, we can't have progress. It goes back to everything from why a governor gets elected and he has to have an agenda before the House of Representatives in about 15 minutes, to the fact that we have to have these independent taxing districts. It's just a mess. Anyway, so obviously, though, the iconic symbol is the frontier guy, rural Kentucky, shaking hands with the city guy, city Kentucky man. But in this case, of course, the old tax code is holding him hostage. Now, somebody holding somebody hostage is a pretty easy thing to show. We've been seeing a lot of that lately in a lot of other cartoons around the nation. National cartoons, I draw about Kentucky as it comes up. There's no budget per se, but once or twice a week, the cartoon's going to be about Kentucky. Tomorrow morning's cartoon, which is online tonight, is about the KHSAA, the Kentucky High School Athletic Association, coming in against the handshakes. And that's a weird, really weird. I mean, Kentucky gets national press for really bad things, usually. And that's one of them. And so the cartoon tomorrow morning is about that.
And all the fights were in the ladies' volleyball teams.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. You know why that might be, and this can come out horribly genderous and everything else, but the guys, I mean, my sons have all played sports. I got one playing basketball, Trinity High School right now. They go through the line, they butt each other, they say, bad game, but it's just guys, right? I think the girls take it more personally. I think they get a little bit more emotional about it. But anyway, that's another 3 hour that I'm not qualified to talk about. I don't have any girls. Once or twice a week, I draw on Kentucky. The rest of the time, it's national. Courier is a Gannett newspaper, and they distribute them then to the nation. So I can get hate mail from Syracuse, New York, and Des Moines, Iowa, and all sorts of places. There was a time last year when we were choosing a new Monopoly piece. Remember that? I don't remember what they picked. What did they end up picking? A cat?
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Instead of a picture of somebody's food, they picked a cat. Yeah. So obviously, but what's really going on in America at this point in time? You got the Tea Party, you got obviously, you know, gun control and the murders and things that have happened, obviously. And then the aging American. I had to explain that to my sons. They'd never seen a bedpan, which is a really good thing. That my sons at my house had never seen a bedpan, but they didn't like that explanation. This really, as President Obama himself says, explains a lot. This was actually his inauguration address. It really didn't look like that. You know, a lot of times people will complain about my cartoons and they will say, well, it didn't. I know it's a cartoon, it's not a photograph. But this raises the point of the president, and we talked about this at dinner, our first black president. How do you draw the first black president? Because we have a long and very bad history in the United States of characterizing African-American people in horrific ways. You know, there's the, I don't even need to explain the way that they've been drawn. Well, here's a black man as president, and the fact is that if you cartooned him, like I would cartoon Mitch McConnell, or like I would cartoon Rand Paul or somebody else, it could come across as a racist cartoon, which is not my intent. As I told Brian, thank God Barack Obama has big ears, because that became the thing that people are able to do instead of something else that would always scratch the surface of some painful history in the United States. Back to this. Now, I didn't get my act together. It would have been kind of difficult, but we've started to animate cartoons now relatively regularly. It hasn't happened for a couple of weeks at the Courier. This one, they're really basic animations. It's really an effort of the newspapers. They're a little bit harder for me to do. It's an effort by the newspaper to increase, obviously, you want more video content, right? Because of what's happening to the newspapers. You can imagine what happens here. The chicken is crossing the road to the Senate race, and it doesn't end well for the chicken, let's just say. And so it is kind of fun because I'm a fan. You know, I grew up during the era when cartoons were classics, you know, the Warner Brothers, the Bugs Bunny, and of course, as you can imagine, the whole Roadrunner and Coyote series of cartoons lends itself visually to a whole lot of political cartooning. You know, the Acme stuff, the anvils falling from the sky, that's politics, right? So lots of feathers and things floating to the ground after this truck wreck. Last Super Bowl, I don't know if you remember, but there was that horrific commercial where the poor, still not grown into his body, pimply, overweight dude is making out with that incredibly hot model. I don't even remember what the product was, but it was just, ugh. Well, even as a fan of the president, I was offended, remain offended at the what I feel to be somewhat irresponsible, at a minimum, use of drones. And to me, what crossed my mind was, it's us lowering our standards. Well, that's exactly what's happening in the commercial, except obviously this was a supermodel instead of the Statue of Liberty. The point, the reason I put this up here, even though it's from last Super Bowl, is that part of what I have to do is put my finger on the pulse of pop culture, which is kind of fun. I get to pay attention to all that stuff and relate pop culture to political happenings. Because if I just consistently drew a bunch of guys in suits with two or three women in pantsuits arguing issues, nobody would be interested in it. So this appeared like the day after the Super Bowl. People were in tune with what that meant. Nowadays, I could show this to 1,000 people, nobody's going to remember what it is. But so they've got to be on top of the pulp culture at the time and then relate it. There's another one that you're going to see coming up later that has to do, I'll give you a hint, has to do with twerking. That so you feel free to leave. But Brian's going to demonstrate, he said. It's an example of how you have to sort of, it's like a puzzle that has to be solved every night. So I'm Catholic, and I went to Notre Dame, and my kids all went to Trinity and St. X, and all that. I live in Louisville. When we elected our last pope, before I realized what an impact it would be that he's a Jesuit, the first Jesuit ever, that he is who he is, frankly, I was quite disappointed. And so I remember sitting and talking to my wife and saying, that's just another old white guy. You have the whole rest of the world, and we got to, okay, he's from Argentina, but they're white, you know. I mean, honestly, they speak Spanish and they're white. I think they're just pretending to speak Spanish, really. And I've been very impressed subsequently with, as a Catholic, what he's done and the approach he's taken. And I've drawn several cartoons where I've been very, very impressed and very congratulatory of the direction the church is taking. The excommunication proceedings are still going on, but nonetheless, I'm trying hard to make amends. Now, Animals, people love animals. We talked about that. People love sports. Again, you know, we could have a war going on for the, you know, 120th year in Afghanistan, but if one of our college basketball teams wins a national championship, that's what people want to talk about. That's what they're interested in. I'm a big sports guy, but I tend not to do a whole lot of sports things. And fortunately, my editor doesn't know a thing about sports. So if she approves what I've drawn, that means that it's definitely something that's crossed over from the sports world. You know, it's not just some third-level draft trade between the Cowboys and the Steelers. It's a big deal. This is kind of a neat story. Very briefly, I drew this during the game in which Kevin Ware, Louisville fans or even basketball fans, had the horrific injury during the regional semifinal. His team gathered around him after they finished passing out, throwing up. Louisville really rallied around that, and it became a real, well, rallying cry. My son, and I put that online, and it was in the newspaper. My son, who at the time was a junior in college, texted me and said, "Dad, have you been on the internet lately?" And I said, "No, not recently." He said, "Well, you can't avoid that image." And as it happens, because people get so excited about sports and everything else, this went viral, and Kevin Ware actually began to use this as his Twitter avatar, which took it to the next level. Long story short, my son at Trinity is wearing a pair of Kevin Ware's basketball shoes because they wear the same size. Kevin didn't need them for about 6 months. One of the players on my son's team plays for U of L. And he said, "See if Jay needs these shoes." So that was pretty cool, if you're a sports fan. Very briefly, you know, we have a lot of pride here in Kentucky. This is an example of me really, really being proud of Kentucky, because you had, obviously, the Cats won, the Cards won. And I could have just left it like that as a geography lesson, but I still had to do that. I wanted to just plug, you know, like, look, hey, you know, North Carolina, forget it. You know, you don't have anything there on us. Okay, remember the cartoon that Hugh Haney drew? Cats versus Cards, we're all going to win, it's great for the state. I mean, love that man. This drew a lot of criticism, and it's a sports cartoon, but it drew a lot of criticism. You'll recall that Nerlens Noel, I mean, I assume most people were in Kentucky, had the injury to his leg. He was going to be out for the rest of the season. Kentucky was already struggling, and it probably meant they weren't going to make the NCAA tournament, right? Well, everybody was writing that. Bloggers, KentuckySportsRadio.com, all these people that inside Cappy were all saying, "Oh my God, we're going to the NIT." Well, so I drew this, two doctors reading the x-ray. "Can you read this?" "Yeah, it says NIT. Now, I even added, because I have a son who plays basketball, this was not about Nerlens. In fact, this was a compliment to Nerlens. You're not going to make it without it. So I never do this. I never leave personal messages. Hugh Haney famously would put his wife's name in all his cartoons. I'm getting some pressure to do that. I said, "Get well soon, Nerlens." Cat Nation descended upon me with four paws. They said it was one of the meanest, most outrageous things they'd ever seen. I said, "I've criticized U of L. I've bragged about Kentucky. Oh, I had a picture of Abraham Lincoln last year wearing a unibrow 2 years ago at the Lincoln Memorial, because the Cats played, I think, a semifinal game in D.C. But they don't remember that. You know, people have short memory. Okay, this is one of the other ones that was rejected on a more serious note. We have made impressive gains in education in the state of Kentucky, led by the universities. I'm very proud of that. We're still woefully behind. There's a lot of problems. A lot of these problems, though, there's a lot of people working to solve those. And you have, very controversial, you have the core standards, right? Well, the core standards were being rejected in the Senate subcommittee. People sort of knew why. I didn't understand why. It ended up that, and I don't know where this gentleman is from. I don't know where Mike Wilson is from. Is he from right here? Well, there you go. To be fair, they didn't print this one. So I found out the chairman of the Senate subcommittee on education was a creationist and was the owner of a Christian radio station. Both of which are fine. People are free to do that. We live in the United States. However, I'm sorry, he shouldn't be the Senate education chairman. So I drew this. This is the classic Darwin, you know, so I tied in the image. We're talking about evolution, so I'm thinking Darwin. I'm thinking everybody knows that image. And I'll just have the state staying here. Well, the editor said, "We don't draw people as monkeys." I said, "That's not really him as a monkey. It's okay, you're right, it is." And but I felt very strongly about that. I still think it was appropriate. They exercised some discretion. People think the paper doesn't exercise discretion. Okay. Little girl, Southern Kentucky. I don't know how close to here, just because I'm not good with maps. But I'm not one of these guys from Louisville that doesn't know where anything is. Remember, I'm from Flatwoods. You remember the little 2-year-old girl was killed by her brother with a rifle that was intended for use by children. It was light blue in color. You could order either a light pink one or a light blue one. They were called, I think, my first rifle by a company called Cricket. I couldn't believe what I was reading. I mean, people differ and have different opinions on gun control and whether it's a mental illness problem and we need to deal with that, or whether there should be some level of registration, or maybe it's a rural versus city problem. Who knows? I think that it's inarguable that a child shouldn't have a weapon that works. Again, we can agree to disagree. So I, having been a prosecutor, as well as a defense attorney, I know what an autopsy report looks like. My intention with this cartoon was to say that that we were all to blame, that the cause of death was corporate greed, it was ignorance as a state, it was political cowardice, because nobody's going to stand up in the state legislature in Kentucky, not for a long time, and I don't blame them, because it would be a waste of time, and make any noise about gun control. And I call this misplaced cultural pride. We stand by our guns. Well, look what happens when you do this sometimes. I mean, a friend of mine just got like a 75-point buck or something. I mean, you know, I have friends who are hunters. I don't have a problem with that. And inevitability. So my point was, this is the reason this girl died. So everything on here would be the same as an autopsy report, except cause of death wasn't rifle wound. I don't think those are shotguns. I think they're little rifles. Rifle wound. I knew it was hard-hitting. They published it, and nothing happened for a couple days. Then the roof caved in. I mean, I received death threats. There were threats against my own children. The newspaper received threats. We had a whole lot of long conference calls about what to do about this. And for the first time that I've been associated with the newspaper, and I think it's the first time that it ever happened, after a couple of days, you know, obviously a newspaper comes and goes and people put it in the trash. Now that you have the internet, and now that you have the newspaper, the .com version available on the internet, you have the ability for people to go back years and look at cartoons and articles and photos and things like that. First time ever they took this off based upon the pressure that they received and some concern about safety, and I think that there was also some concern about appropriateness. They took it off the website. There was apparently a wanted poster or a series of wanted posters down here tacked to telephone poles, not down here but there, of me, and I wanted one of those. I couldn't get anybody to get it. Not that I'm proud of upsetting people, just because, I mean, how many times are you going to have a wanted poster with your picture on it, actually? But that's an example of one. In terms of the decisions that an artist makes, I could have left off the blood, because the fact is, in an autopsy report, this is all black and white. You know that. There's no color. There's just little dots and things like that. I think that when this went up on the screen just now, that's the first place you look. It's a little itty-bitty girl with pigtails, and that's exactly what I wanted you to do. Because my point is, viscerally, I'm not playing with your emotions, but again, it's not writing. I want you to see that and remember that, because the next time, in my opinion, the next time you're talking with friends about this, I want somebody to say, it was a 2-year-old girl, instead of, yeah, didn't something happen down there in the South? Now, I'm aware that what I do is an extreme exercise in hubris and some level of arrogance, because 5 times a week, I tell however many people, you know, theoretically, you know, 250,000 or more people, here's what I think. Not what some committee thinks, not what the politicians think. Here's what I think about an issue. However, as Brian said, it's one person who represents more than just one person, because other people do share those opinions. I'm not completely just the result of an accordion player marrying a TV show host. I mean, I have some semblance of normality. It does start the debate. So I'm going to run through the rest of these very quickly. Sometimes there's no political position at all. Elves on the Shelves were very big last year. I don't have young kids anymore. I understand they're driving parents absolutely freaking crazy, because now you have to outdo the other parents and you have to post something on Facebook, and you know, you've got to have the coolest elf on the shelf that's taking a bath with your child or fixing them breakfast or something. That's when we had those Sandy Hook shootings. Again, from a political cartooning point of view, everybody would have seen what that is immediately this time last year. Maybe even, I mean, the thing is, social culture is such today that maybe this time next year nobody would even remember what that is. I don't think so if you have young kids. Some things are just too easy. I put this up there as a way of saying that the minute that Mitt Romney made that comment in the debate a year and a half ago, you could smell the rubber burning on the tires of the political cartoonist's cars as they were driving home to draw a cartoon to be the first guy on the internet. As soon as he said that, I specifically turned off everything electronic in my house, even the TV. First of all, I didn't need to hear anymore. secondly, I didn't want to accidentally see somebody else already posting their Binder Full of Women cartoon so that I couldn't be accused of plagiarizing. So, yeah, Binder Full of Women, women in poverty, women denied health care, women paid less, women dead from back alley abortions, women denied children. Too easy. Some residents down here, Governor Beshear, who's a former law partner of mine, and there was quite a level of consternation at the law firm about, so now that he's the governor and you're the political cartoonist, what does that mean? And I said, I got to go. Yeah, I just left the room. So, as people know, I've continued to draw Governor Beshear. He got rid of Senator Williams, and now he's a judge. Some easy and obvious issues arise. Chick-fil-A. This was a really sad incident, and I was impressed with the number of Penn State fans and sports fans who were worried about the impact this is going to have on their school. And I thought, like it says, like the kids say nowadays, really? Again, too easy. I like doing serious, non-political art. It struck me that when Abraham Lincoln gave his Gettysburg Address, he was talking about our soldiers today, too. That's why I drew that. I didn't get him to sign that. I actually copied that signature. That's another one. Sometimes I'm able to have a little bit more time and do a piece of art in which we think. Now, obviously, I have a soft spot in my heart. You know, people have accused me. Some of my commenters in the newspaper call me Marx Murphy instead of Mark Murphy. They accuse me of being everything. But I'm actually very strong about defense. I'm a veteran myself. My son's serving right now. They deserve to be thanked. Okay. You already saw it. Everybody knows this image. Hopefully we'll forget it, although I think you can never unsee that. Now, Ashley Judd, she's a homie of mine. I went to high school with Billy Ray Cyrus, so I feel like I'm related to Miley. And I had to draw that. Just then, we all learned that Representative John Arnold has engaged in a decade-long time of conduct that's contrary to standards for women. More importantly, though, because anybody, I mean, that's him. People have flaws. The real flaw, though, and I usually don't criticize individuals, I criticize systems, and the real flaw was that the House leadership, demonstrated by Miley, basically just bent over to, if you will, to the will of the legislators. I drew this originally. The editor called me back and said, you know that he's famous for smoking a cigar. And I said, I did not know that. So he has a cigar in his hand. And I got to draw Miley. This is more recently. I'm partial to Abraham Lincoln. We all are as Kentuckians. Anybody who's been to the Lincoln Memorial and who thinks about it being closed now knows that around the Lincoln Memorial are his speeches, the better part of his speeches. This part of this speech is not up there. It's down here. That wouldn't make any sense. Again, that's not meant to be funny, obviously. It's not meant to be cute. It's meant to make people compare what's going on now with what Abraham Lincoln maybe would have done in one visual image. Oh, and also I liked it because even though I cheated because there's words, nobody's saying anything. So the Republicans have tried to get rid of Obamacare for a long time, even before the shutdown. I envisioned I was at the state fair. I envisioned that it's one of those whack-a-mole games, except there's only one hole. All they have to do is hit it well. They can't, and it's the Republicans who are on the ground. So that's it from the cartooning perspective. But if there's time, I'll take questions. It takes all day to conceive of it. Once I'm able to draw it, it's about an hour and a half to 2 hours. As I was saying at dinner, it's a really good day or night if I can sit down and I already know what I'm drawing. And then it's just a matter of visualizing and executing it. Once or twice a week, I do five a week. Once or twice a week, I sit down, it's 8 o'clock, it's 9 o'clock. I'm tired, I've got a hearing the next day, I've been in a hearing all day, or I just want to go to bed and I got nothing. But then I turn on Fox News.
You make more billable hours, don't you?
What's that?
You make more money than your billable hours. I mean, an hour and a half.
Yeah. No, that hour and a half is equivalent to me being a first-year lawyer at the Legal Aid Society.
Okay. Some of your students, any questions about technical?
Yeah, I was just going to ask more about the process itself. You talked a lot about the response, but I'm kind of interested in the process of actually drawing it or... I guess thinking of the ideas, you got time for that.
What's that? My life changed forever. My life changed forever when I got married. My life changed forever when I had my three sons. Okay, my life really changed forever when I was able to go from paper, because I do work all day and I travel with my cases. I'm on airplanes or I'm in cars going to hearings all over the place. And so I would have to take paper with me. If I was out of town, I'd have to go find a Kinko's, then scan that cartoon back to the Courier-Journal. I started to use an iPad for work, take all my notes, use all my email, everything else. And there's a program called Sketchbook Pro. I still have to, it's still me drawing. It's as if it's a piece of, you knew that.
On my phone, actually.
Oh, on your phone.
I got that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Put it on your iPad.
Too.
So I use a stylus. It took me about 3 months of practicing using a stylus instead of a pen and using a screen instead of paper before I was able, I had the confidence to send it to the newspaper that way. Now I wouldn't do it any other way. Obviously, it travels well. I can send them to every newspaper in the country with the press of a button. And then this is funny. I paid for the cost of the iPad within about the first 3 months of the ink and the pens and the paper that I didn't have to buy. Like the one that I did this evening while I was waiting for us to have dinner is this one right there. Can you see it? But that's how I do it.
So you no longer have originals then?
Yeah, so people ask for originals. And so Brian asked for a couple. What I have to do then is print them. So there's actually no, the great thing when you go see, like, there's going to be a new presentation of Hugh Haney's cartoons, 100 of them in Louisville at the Fraser History Museum. And when you go there and you look close, it's like when I always get in trouble when I'm in an art museum because my wife has to pull me back or the security guard pulls me back. Because I'm like here, because I like to see the bristles in the thing and the brush strokes. So there's none of that. With Hugh, you see whiteout and carvings and things like that. In mine, the image that you saw is printed out on cardstock and then I sign it. So that's lost. Absolutely, yeah. There's no original per se.
Other questions?
Yeah.
What cartoon were you nominated for Pulitzer?
The Pulitzer is a process where you submit 10. They were 10 of them that were really good, but just not quite good enough.
What's your personal favorite cartoon
drawing? Oh, no one's ever asked me that before, I swear.
I'm a psychologist.
Oh. And then, because if I tell you, you're going to say, well, this is what this says about you. You're a bad person. What everybody says about you is true. You know what, though? I don't know, and I don't want everybody to have to sit while I think about it. I will, I'll have to think about that. That'd be an interesting subject to keep you awake on the way home. Yes.
Over here. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
When you said you could send a cartoon to every newspaper in the country with a tap of a finger, are you... do that hoping some of them will pick it up, or are you, is it, does the Courier have to publish it first and then they...
I own the cartoon. I actually only send out two emails. I send one to the Courier every morning, and I send one to Gannett, the parent company, every morning, and then Gannett distributes those for me to all the newspapers. And then what happens is every morning the editors wake up, go to work, have their coffee, unless they have their own editorial cartoonist, which most of them don't anymore, which is... I'm a scab, basically. Newspapers across the country are firing all of their political cartoonists. Pulitzer Prize winners, I get emails about this, Pulitzer Prize winners are losing their jobs. It's just a tragedy. But as a result of that, the Courier-Journal needed a cartoonist. They didn't fire anybody, Nick Anderson left. And so a lot of these other newspapers, they have to pull something up from the national database. And so on a daily basis, like I said, a newspaper in Poughkeepsie will say, yeah, we want to use that one. My cartoons, they could appear anywhere in the country, but they're going to be Gannett papers. There's another aspect to that. I'll think about it later.
Are you compensated for that?
If someone else uses your cartoon, do you get extra for it?
Nothing. I'm the world's crappiest lawyer. Yeah. I negotiated nothing. No, there's no money to pay for these. I mean, the Courier pays me one shot, and whether it's seen by, because it gets shared and sent to other papers, whether it's seen by a million people or five people, I get the same. So that's why he bought me the
Yes, right here.
You said you're a liberal, and I saw in one of your cartoons that you said out of the last 10 presidents, Obama has talked about poverty the least.
That was, you know what, of my recent ones, that was one of my most favorite to the psychiatrist. Yes. So you know how you're... some people have accused me of being critical of Obama on occasion just to show fairness, but that I'm not really critical. But I'm very critical of that. What he's talking about, there's a cartoon, you know, the famous Obama Hope poster, the one he campaigned on. It became iconic. So I drew the same sort of artwork, and it had a child's head on it, like a five-year-old boy's head on it, sad. It said, no hope. And to the right of it, I don't usually actually editorialize, like I said, but I had to make the point here. and this is a fact, of the last 10 presidents, that goes through both Bushes, goes all the way back to Kennedy, of the last 10 presidents, my president, Barack Obama, has mentioned or discussed publicly the issue of poverty less than any of them. And that's because he's trying to put himself in a position where he's talking about the middle class. Fact of the matter is, poor don't vote. They can't get to the polls. And if you're in North Carolina, they're never going to get to the polls. That's a whole other issue.
Yeah, I was going to ask, my real question was, like, you were criticizing Obama, which, you know, you're a liberal. So it surprised me. You talked about poverty in a few of your cartoons, more than any of other issues. That stuck out to me as, like, the main issue.
Oh, that's interesting.
You talk about. Poverty.
I do. Yeah.
So why is poverty so interesting? Why is it so important to you?
Between a fifth and a quarter of all children in the state of Kentucky live in poverty. When it comes to standard of living, if you use what's called a developing country, the United States actually no longer, by a long shot, treats its citizens, nor do they have the standard of living of other countries. I think that of all the other wealth that we have, the advantages that we have, the system that we have for people to earn that wealth, I think that it's and it will continue to be one of the worst problems and one of the most disappointing aspects of this country, at least to me. You know, I mean, Lyndon Johnson started a war on poverty. It's been Vietnam. I mean, we're not winning. And you have an entire presidential election where the poor are hardly ever mentioned. I mean, you could go back to all the tapes and all the dialogue between the two major candidates for president in the last election, and there was a lot of talk about a lot of things, all important things, but the poor were never mentioned. And to me, that's the biggest crime of all, is because no one speaks for them. No one.